Hello, everybody. This is Adam Shartoff, your host of FilmWax, and this is Friday, January 26, 2024, and this is episode 791 of the podcast. Oh, my gosh, what a great episode. Really, really great episode. Two different guests, two different segments, not so surprising. We have an Oscar-nominated, as in this year, Oscar-nominated filmmaker, his Danish filmmaker. His name is Lasse Noel. And Noel, my Danish is sketchy at best, so have patience. His short film, Night of Fortune, is up for an Oscar for Best Short Film. We'll get to that in momentarily. And then I just wanted to tell you, old friend of the podcast, coming on now for 9 years. This is his, I think, fifth time on the show. Josh Karp writes about film. He's written books. He's written many articles. He's a contributor to Airmail. And he has a recent article came out a couple of weeks ago about the making of Robert Altman's film, The Long Goodbye, and specifically about the casting of Elliot Gould. And it was very entertaining. He co-wrote it with Mark Freeman, another journalist, and you can read it on Airmail. That's going to come up in a little while in our second segment. But first up here, this is a Danish filmmaker. Now, I went into it for personal reasons. My partner is Danish. So I thought it would be fun to get a copy of the film, watch it with her. And it turns out, it was really entertaining and great. And it was shortlisted. And then it moved up and it became nominated. We just found out a few days ago. So it's taken me a little bit of time, but here we go. This is going to be my conversation with Lasse Noel. And again, I apologize to the Danish people and especially to Lasse for my butchering his name. It's pretty bad. Now, here's the fun part. On this episode, after we're talking for a while, and I won't shut up, I apologize for that as well in advance. My partner, Christina, comes in. And the two of them start chatting over Zoom, during this interview. It was fine. I welcomed it. I asked her to say hello. And then they two were able to chat for a little while. So if you speak Danish, you'll be at a great advantage, even over me. Okay. Night of Fortune is available. Currently, you can watch it on the New Yorker website or just search Night of Fortune, Google Night of Fortune, or you can their YouTube channel, the New Yorker magazine's YouTube channel. You can watch Night of Fortune. It's pretty short the category that it falls in suggests, and it's very funny. It's a dark comedy. In fact, I'll just tell you the little description under the title says, it's L-A-S-S-E, Lasse Noel's short film, Two Widowers Lean on Each Other for Emotional Support. It all takes place in a morgue in what I assume is Copenhagen. It's a funny film, and I think you'll enjoy it, so you can watch it. You may want to do that before you listen to this, in fact. I wouldn't blame you. All right, here it is. The filmmaker, Lasse Noel, here on FilmWax Radio.
All the streets are cracked, and there's glass everywhere. And a baby stares out with motherless eyes.
Men åbner vi på tre, eller åbner vi på nu?
På nu?
Ja, jeg tæller. En, to, tre, nu.
Anymore though, but here in Denmark, a lot of people still get sick with COVID. Actually, quite a lot at the moment.
I was there in September.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I was in
Where were
Copenhagen.
you? Where were you?
Yeah.
In Copenhagen? Yeah.
My father in law or bonus father.
Yeah.
He turned 80, and
Okay.
by all just to be transparent, Lasse,
Yeah.
my partner, she's Danish, so
Oh.
it was one of the reasons I was
Oh,
interested.
that's why.
Yeah,
Okay.
well, we
Yeah.
watched it together, yes, and
Yeah.
I was like, oh, let me yes, I'm trying to learn Danish. So
Oh, that's funny. Is she in the film business, or
No.
is she just to watch it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a teacher. She's a professor. She teaches college,
Oh, nice.
and she's yeah, she's but she's in the art, it's very creative type. She's also yeah. And so we watched it,
Yeah.
Night of your short Night of Fortune, which is Oscar qualified. Get that out of the way.
Yeah,
Congratulations.
yeah.
So and she laughed like through the whole, she enjoyed
Oh,
it very
that's
much.
nice.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, she really enjoyed it.
It's amazing. It's worked in Denmark and in France and in the US. People are laughing everywhere we screen it, and that means a lot to me.
Well, that I bet it does, because if
Yeah.
they're not, then it's not working, right? I mean,
Yeah, yeah.
it's dark humor, and I think though the people, anybody with a certain level of sophistication or awareness will understand what you're
Yeah,
doing, you know.
I hope so. It goes to show right now that people understand, and people are laughing. That means a lot, because when I was in the cinemas around the world, I was always, especially in the beginning, I was so nervous. You know, how are people going to react to it? What when you get the first laugh, when you
It's a
know,
relief, right?
yeah,
You know,
that's a big relief. So then you can
yeah.
start. Oh, people are laughing. You know.
Well, I have to ask now. I mean, were there any occasions where there were no laughs?
No, there haven't been actually.
Oh,
There
thank
haven't been.
goodness. Well, that's good.
But people have interpreted in different ways. I was talking with I was doing an interview with someone from, I think he was from Morocco, and he was focusing a lot of on the not seeing the body thing, you know, because they had a lot of people there that had not seen people they've lost. So that was a big thing for him. And to others, it's more like the grief thing and saying goodbye. That's the theme. So people are laughing, but interpreting the movie in different ways depending on where they come from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I could see at the for a little while where people are, you know, I mean, that's the whole idea, is to build tension, right? I mean, that's how it works so well. If at the very beginning, the widower who goes to the morgue to see his dead wife's body and to identify it, I'm just setting it up for anybody watching as well. And he slips on a banana peel. It's kind of, there you go. But what you're doing is building something. So by the time you kind of start getting the idea, it's go and then it goes into very absurd direction. So yeah, I think that's why it's successful. You're pacing everything. Did you have a hand in editing it too? I can't remember. I'm sure you had an editor.
Yeah, I had an editor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so crucial,
Yeah.
right? In a
We worked
comedy.
along. No, we didn't. We did actually edit it on, I think it was one or two months we took in the editing room. So we worked a lot together there, but he was a great editor. Nice to work with. I worked with him before. You know, it's almost like a marriage with an editor. You know,
Right.
you have to be able to say things out loud.
Sure.
Sometimes you can be angry with him, and he can be angry with me, you know, and that's how it is. And then sometimes I find out, oh, that was the right answer. That you had the answer. You came up with the right idea there. I just had to see it. And sometimes you just need to take a small break from each other. That's sometimes it is with me and him at least. So take 1 or 2 days away from each other, and then we come back to the editing room and we see it with new eyes, right? So
Yes. Yeah.
yeah.
letting go of your ideas or, you know, killing your darlings, as this, we have an expression, kill your darlings. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, I there's this band, this has nothing to do with film, but there's a band, I work at a radio station, and there's this wonderful band. You should, if you're not familiar with them, you may like them. It's, they're called Darling Side, like Suicide.
Okay, I'm going to write that down.
Write it down. They're really good. They're very, very atmospheric, you know, kind of, I think, but they write good songs, and it's a pretty good band. I've gotten, I really like them, Darling Side. So it's like killing your darlings, you know.
Yeah,
It's hard, and that's why, thank God for editors, because I think it's not just the skills behind, you know, their skill set, but it's also being able to, somebody who's going to objectively look at your story and make, you know, and you do have to put a lot of trust in that person.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know how people edit their own films, but.
No, I don't know. I sometimes you wish you could, but I know it's better when you leave it to someone else. That's my take on it. And actually also with the score on this one, it also took some time to get the right music. Because when we did the first screening, people were actually in doubt if they could laugh, you know, because it's such a sensitive topic.
Right.
They didn't know if they could laugh. So we had to make a score that had some light in it and also some hope. So it didn't become this, you know, the first take could be to make it like church music or something like that, right? So we had to come up with a track that put some light in it in the beginning. We put it in the beginning of the film. And that's also to create this feeling that, okay, it's not that dark.
Right. That's right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Right. You don't want to make it too whimsical, because then you're like, you know, into Mel Brooks, you know, territory.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Exactly.
But then again, you don't want a dirge, which would be very, you know, heavy sounding. And yes, right. And what is the actor who plays our lead character?
Leif André. He's a Swedish actor.
Oh, right. He's Swedish. Yeah, that's right. Swedish, I forgot. Yeah.
And
he's terrific.
He wasn't my first priority. We did some casting with Danish actor. I couldn't really find the right one, because I wanted people that really dedicated to the script and to the story. And then my producer, I worked with Leif André before on a commercial, actually.
Okay.
My producer asked, maybe we should send the script to Leif. And then 3 days later, Leif called me and he said he had cried every time he read it. So,
wow.
Yeah. So he was so onto it, and it was so personal to him at this time. So I actually decided to change the script a little bit, so the main character became Swedish, and also gave the story something. It's only not something, you know, when you come from Denmark or Sweden, at least.
Because
I believe when you're in US, Swedish and Danish can sound very similar, right?
Well, I mean, I think honestly, Danish is a much harder language than Swedish. It's really challenging. I mean, I'm a little intimidated. I've been in this relationship for a couple of years, and every time I try to learn, I mean, even pronouncing your name,
Lasse.
I mean, she was like, you sound like you have a potato in your mouth. Thank you very much. Very, very kind.
You pronounced it actually quite right. So,
well, thank you.
Lassie. Anyway,
say that again. I'll call in my
Lesser.
She's
the right way. Lesser. Yeah.
Lesser. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do you pronounce Noor? How do you pronounce?
Yeah. Noor.
Noor.
Yeah. Noor.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll get
it. So without the E, it's just N-O-R.
Right. I understand.
Yeah.
If I can manage to learn Danish, that I'll be finished. I won't have anywhere. I won't have to learn anything else.
No. Is your wife living in Denmark or
what?
Your partner is.
She's here. We're in New York. Yeah. We're a little north of New York City, and she teaches in a couple of schools. And she's been here for a long time.
Okay.
But so we're I hope we go back in the summer.
Yeah, yeah,
family has a house like on the ocean, so I've not been there yet, so I really look forward to it. Yeah, tell me a little bit though, like about what the process was like for qualifying. Yes. How your film, again, it's called Night of Fortune, which is a reference to a song, a popular song, which comes up obviously during the course of your story. But how does a short film, you know, what is that whole experience? Can you talk a little bit about it and what that was like for you personally?
Yeah, it's been an adventure, actually. This is actually my first real short film. I've done music videos before.
Right,
so
right.
So it's been quite an adventure in going to, I was at Clermont-Ferrand, this big short film festival in France. There was 1,400 people watching my film in the cinema there. That was quite amazing. Mm-hmm. Also very nerve-wracking. I'm actually a very introverted guy, so it's also kind of tough for me to have the spotlight on me, you know. So it's an adventure, but also challenging at sometimes, you know.
Sure.
Being there, doing interviews, Q&As all the time, being in the spotlight. I'm not used to being in front of the camera, so I like being behind it. So, but still, you know, sometimes it's hard to just enjoy it. I think when I look behind in 2 years' time, it's gonna feel amazing what I've been through. But right now, you're pacing towards the Oscars, also, right? So. And you're crossing your fingers that you'll be on that short list. So, yeah, but it's still an adventure. And I think every time I'm in the cinema watching it with the audience and people coming up to me afterwards, telling me what it's meant to them, they've been laughing. And I had a French young dude came up to me and he said, "I didn't know I could laugh and cry at the same time." And now I'm gonna go call my grandma and ask her if she's okay. Oh. So that's the perfect right.
That's the perfect response to your film. But well, laughing and crying, of course, are both tension releases again, right? So they are close relations. So was that festival in France? What town was it in?
Clermont-Ferrand. It's called.
Clermont.
Yeah, Clermont.
Is that a qualifying type of festival or?
We didn't win the festival. We got a special mention. Yeah, but it's the biggest festival I've been to. It's quite enormous, and a lot of French people come there to watch short films, and that's pretty incredible. I'm not used to that in Denmark. We have few festivals with not a lot of attendees, so it's amazing to feel this vibe of people being cultural and supporting artists. That was quite amazing to experience.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
And so, also at the Banff Film Festival, actually. It was amazing in Portland.
You went to that?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of that festival too.
Yeah, that's Banff is a nice town.
Yeah. Is it?
When I went there, I was thinking, oh, I want to live here. That's really a nice place. So I could really recommend going to that that festival.
All right. Yeah, I've been hearing about that festival for a while. Good to know. And then did you submit the film? Is that what happened? You submitted to?
Yeah, I think so. I have Kim Magnussen on as a producer, and he's sort of running this show, this Oscar qualifying show. So it's, I don't know all the details about it, but it's, I think he submitted it. Yeah.
So are you waiting to hear if it's a nominated short now?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then if it's nominated,
I think it's the 21st actually.
Oh, December 21st. You find out if it's officially nominated. So it's on the
shortlist the first. Yeah.
Right. And then if it's nominated, you actually would probably be invited to go to the whatever Oscar presentation would be for international short films. I don't think that's part of the main evening, but it's probably a separate ceremony is my guess, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure actually how it is, but that's...
I could be wrong, by the way. Yeah. I could be very wrong. I don't know.
Yeah.
But because it would be best foreign short, wouldn't it?
No, I think it's the same category.
Okay.
I've just heard that Wes Anderson is in the same kind of category. So.
Oh, there you go. So it's just best short film. That's fantastic. Can you imagine making it all the way? That would be amazing. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
That would open up some doors. Either way, even if you're nominated, it's great.
Yeah.
Are there any other Danish shorts that are...
To my knowledge, no. But maybe some I don't know about, but not to my knowledge right now.
I have other people from the Danish film community contacted you or reached out and has it
actually
any relationships?
I'm working on a feature film right now. So,
oh, beautiful.
But it's still in
yeah, early stages.
Yeah. So, I've got a lot of attention.
That's nice.
Yeah. So that's nice. So, hopefully I will make my first feature within a couple of years.
Very good. Yeah. Well, it seems like the natural course, you know, to take, I mean, I suppose, and it doesn't necessarily mean you have to, would stop making commercials or music videos or even short films for that matter. But it seems to typically be in the United States anyway, a young filmmaker makes a short, and young, I don't mean age-wise, I just mean in terms of career, you know, would make a short film or two or three or four. And then once they've kind of mastered that, you know, they move on to features and kind of turn their back on the short film. Although there are some exceptions. Some people like to make short films and it's a way of developing a feature sometimes. Yeah. And can it be used to raise money? Like here, we don't have, as you probably know, very few resources that other than privately raising financing. So whereas in Denmark, I know you have probably government.
We have government support. Yeah. But it's still getting harder and harder to do it in Denmark. And also people are also trying to do it privately actually to fund their feature films.
Because then you're under less scrutiny too, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to qualify or rather meet standards that are other than your own because the government must also have some say.
Yeah, they also take part of the profits, right?
They do? I didn't know that. Wait a minute, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah. So
if you make, but it maybe it makes sense. I mean, you know, that if you make money that you would return the initial investment, possibly, I suppose, based on whatever your profits are. I guess that's not, I have to think about that, but that doesn't seem on the surface too unfair.
No,
I mean, I have to support other artists. So that's great. I like the way that sounds, you know.
We
what do you think of the United States? And you can speak your mind here. What do you think of our uber capitalist culture here?
it was the Trump era. That was fucking weird to me.
Yeah, I know. What happened to the estates?
What happened
to you guys?
Yeah.
It may even be worse since he stopped, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that? Because I hear a lot about that it's actually getting worse. But I don't know how is it to live there?
That's the filmmaker. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Det er mig, der er dansk. Altså stadig i pyjamas og sådan noget, så det beklager jeg.
It looks like your brother's a
boy. Ja, det ligner lidt min lillebror. Nå, det er hans lejlighed. Hvor er du henne?
Jeg sidder faktisk i Aarhus.
Okay.
Ja.
Det er da, jeg gik i gymnasiet. Jeg gik på OSG i Aarhus.
Nå, okay. Ej, hvor sjovt. Jeg hører, du har et sommerhus eller sådan noget i stedet i Danmark.
På Mols i Fuglsø.
Nå, okay. Ej, hvor dejligt.
Just describing the neighborhood.
Yeah. What?
What neighborhood?
What neighborhood?
Well, it looks like your brother's apartment.
You're not understanding anything with that?
It's a Danish thing, right?
I see. Didn't you say I said your name right?
Yeah.
Lesser Noah.
It's perfect. That's Noah, yeah.
Very good.
Thank you.
No?
Brilliant Danish.
That's all I can say.
Yeah. Jamen, der er danskere i hele verden. De er jo over det hele, så...
Ja, du underviser derovre, kan jeg forstå.
Jeg har været her i lang tid. Jeg underviser på universitetet og sådan
slags. Hvad er det, du
med? Og i fængsler.
I think
but
so.
We were I told Lasse that we were also when we were watching you laughed the whole way through and it was
I know it's hilarious.
It's really very funny, beautifully paced, right?
No, it's a very beautiful film.
I don't typically ask Christina to join. But
I guess you watch a lot of films, right?
I do, but I've been kind of slowing down a little bit lately. I kind of, and now I'm working. We were talking about film festivals where I didn't mention that I associated with a film festival in this area called the Woodstock Film Festival. And I wish we had known about your short. Sorry. Thanks for coming.
Bye-bye.
And it, you know what? She's not even the first girlfriend from Denmark. Back in the 80s, I dated, which was my first and only other trip to Copenhagen. And when we were there in September, we met with her, my first girlfriend. We met and we had coffee with this woman, Carolina. We met with her. I hadn't seen her in many, many, many years. And it was really nice.
Well, that's funny.
We all got along very well.
At the same place then?
What?
You met them at the same place or?
Well, yeah. What's the name of I always forget where the tour boats go, where, you know, if you take the river tour.
Yeah. You
know, the downtown, there's museum.
Christina, you mean that? Or...
Okay, yeah. The support, you know, where.
Yeah.
Where you could take the little cruises. So I was there and I took this photo. However many years ago, I guess 35, 40 years ago, I was very young, obviously, and I took this photo over there, and it was very different, very undeveloped. You know what I mean? It was like, you probably weren't born yet, but we went back, and I hadn't been there in many years, and now it's this very, you know, robust neighborhood with a lot of tourism and this beautiful, actually, we went with her and her brother and her brother's girlfriend. We took this cruise around the rivers around, and it was a really beautiful way of seeing the city. It was really, I mean, it's, I know it's a big tourist thing, but it's actually really great. We all enjoyed that. And then when we got back, we met with this other friend of mine who I, you know, dated back in the, like I say, late 80s. And it was a bit surrealistic.
Yeah.
Maybe a topic for a short film.
It's a funny story, actually.
Yeah. Well, you know, like this American who hadn't been there in so many years, I was trying to find things that would look familiar. It was like going back and seeing my childhood. It was actually really a lovely experience. And so to answer the question which I did hear you ask right before Christina came up, if things go poorly, any worse, I may be moving there. So.
Okay.
I mean, it's disaster over here. It's just a disaster.
Yeah, you should move to Denmark. Yeah, that would be a nice. I wouldn't say ending, but a nice
coming full circle. Yeah,
coming full circle. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's like a disaster here. I'm hoping that somehow we can correct things and then to stabilize things again because things are terribly destabilized.
Yeah, it's also when you travel around in the U.S., that's such a big difference. Right. State to state, right?
Yeah,
it's, you know, to sort of, what do you say, keep it all together.
Right.
It seems like trying to keep Europe all together, and it's also difficult for us at the moment, right, with the EU and
right.
So
I mean, in Europe at least is a far more, I mean, I guess Eastern Europe and Western Europe, and then you have sort of the more Asian influences up in closer to the Baltic, whatever. I mean, I guess you have like, you know, some major cultural differences, but over, you know, most of Western Europe and Central Europe, you know, people have similar values and, you know, experiences. Whereas in the United States, it's so big and we, you know, it's just so huge, you know, there's such different types of people here. And of course, hundreds of years of immigration, you know, so anyway,
it's also what's hard to sometimes understand is all the medias and the things we get from the U.S. come from all the bigger cities, right? New York, L.A., you know,
Washington,
those values. Yeah. And then we have the election, we think everybody is thinking like that, right?
Right.
Thinking Democratic or... And then
you have to go online and see
the other voices. Also,
right. You have to go online and watch these more, what we now call pro-democracy.
Yeah.
Progressive types of shows. which I spend too much time watching. Anyway, I'm sorry to get so far off topic here.
Oh, it's okay.
You can watch the entire film, Night of Fortune, directed by Lesa Noa. sorry. Anyway, this wonderful Danish filmmaker now, this aspiring filmmaker, you can watch it on the New Yorker YouTube site. We'll put the link in the notes and all that business so people can see it. And if you come to the United States, reach out. We do have, like I say, I'm working with the Woodstock Film Festival. So when your feature is done, we should talk because you could show it. If it doesn't get into the New York Film Festival, you have another New York festival that's pretty popular. We're going to have our 25th year next fall, 2024, the 25th Woodstock Film Festival. It's a pretty wonderful festival, actually.
Yeah, I would like to go there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful part of the country, by the way. Yeah. And it's only about 2 hours or a little less from New York City.
Yeah.
You know, so
go there sometime.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Yeah, many years ahead of you. So if we're not a complete fascistic, if they're letting foreigners in, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And the handmaids can help you drive you up here. And
I hope not. I hope not. No. I cross my fingers. I believe. Right.
It was really nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too, man. An honor to be here.
Oh, I feel the same. And so have a nice evening, I guess, or afternoon.
Yeah, it's getting darker outside right now.
Oh, my gosh. Is it 2:30 or 3:30? What time is it?
It's 3:30. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have to go to
It's getting dark soon at the moment.
I know, so, I know. Yeah. It's So get outside a little bit while you well, you probably were already, but again, my apologies. Sometimes I just don't shut up. I know it. I thought I managed to get that figured out, and I guess I have, and I listen to it, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, shut up, Chertoff. Thank you for bearing with me. Hopefully that won't be the case in this next segment. I love Josh Karp. He's one of my favorite guests. He's now in the inner circle. Five times it means you're in the inner circle. There's no getting out now. It's the circle's closed. You're inside of it. So we know Josh will be on again soon because he's got another project he's starting to work on. And he touches on it, I think, at the end. You can check again. Go to Airmail and just search the title of the article. It's called A Man Out of Time, How Robert Altman and a Down-on-His-Luck Elliot Gould Reinvented the Detective Movie. Again, co-written by Josh Karp and Mark Freeman. This is my latest conversation with film journalist, author, even producer, Josh Karp, right here on FilmWise Radio. Josh.
How you doing?
All right, how are you?
I'm good. How's California?
It was good. I'm back. Do you know how many times this makes that you've been on this?
No idea. Do you know?
This is the fifth time.
All right. That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm just like, yeah. I went back and I looked. Your first time, it appears, was in 2015.
Oh, shit. Are you kidding me?
No. I looked it up here. God. Yeah, June 26th. Well, at least that's the day that the episode dropped. It was on June 26th, 2015. The paperback version of the Orson Welles
was
out, I guess. And yeah, did we do that online, right, from the very beginning, didn't we? Or were you in town? You were in
New York. I did that. We did that online.
Yeah, amazing. So we've never met in person. Well, one of these days.
Absolutely.
We'll totally rectify it. I'll take you. If you come here, I'll take you out. If I go there, you take me out.
You got a deal.
I'd love to meet your family and everybody. Yeah, that would be fun. I look forward to that.
Cool, me too.
So, you know, I was thinking, what was your like origin story with becoming, would you call yourself a film journalist, pop culture journalist?
You know,
Or do you make any distinction?
you know, I mean, I started out writing about like totally stuff completely other than film and pop culture. I actually started out writing for Crain's Chicago Business, and just freelancing when I got out of grad school, and then
What
I
was
did.
that? What was your degree in?
I got a journalism degree at Northwestern, and what wound up happening was while I was looking for like full-time work, I started freelancing at a bunch of different places, and all of a sudden I was like, you know, for whatever reason, I think having worked unhappily in the business world before I was a journalist, I able to kind of approach it a little bit more like a business than a lot of writers. So anyway, I did business stories. I was a stringer for Newsweek. I did all kinds of stuff. And then I wrote this book about Doug Kenny, who started National Lampoon and
Of
wrote Animals
course.
and Caddyshack.
Right.
And that got me into what I do now,
But how
which
did that? All right. Couple of questions.
yes.
So when you're writing for what was again the periodical?
Crain's Chicago
Crain's, of
Business.
course, Crain's, one of the leading business magazines, right? What did you have an area kind of there in that area that you had a little bit of knowledge about, or you just sort of
No, I really didn't. You know, I had a business background and I had a law degree. So I
Okay, you had a
had
law degree, and then
yeah,
you.
I went to law school at Loyola University in Chicago. Yeah.
Oh, sounds good.
But
Okay.
I did not practice. I
Yeah.
went into business for a few years.
You
Anyway,
take the bar?
yeah,
Oh.
I passed the Illinois bar. So
Okay.
I'm no longer a
I'm beginning to have a lot more respect for you.
And that's usually my trick, is tell them I have a law degree and I get the respect. No, but you know, I just wrote about kind of anything that they wanted me to write about, and wound up just I wrote a profile of Bill Zemme, who I don't know, he just passed away last year. He was like the premier celebrity profile writer in the country at one time. He did all the cover stories for for Esquire for a long time. You know, wrote about Arnold Schwarzenegger, wrote about Woody Allen, wrote about all these big celebrities. And I wrote a profile of him that kind of broke me out of just writing about business and just doing, you know, kind of conventional
Were
stories.
you itching to do something like that? It was like something you were suppressing.
No, you know, I mean, I was just happy to be making a living as a writer, and you know, and I was, you know, thrilled that I could make it work without having like a real job. And I wrote a profile of him, and that was for like a local kind of free paper type of thing.
Okay,
That
right.
wound up getting me a decent amount of attention nationally because the people at the magazines he wrote for, you know, had read it and stuff like that. And it was the first thing I really wrote that had kind of a voice to it rather
Yeah,
than just a
right.
reported story.
Typically, you would hide your personality behind a business story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so from there I wound up, you know, I saw a thing in a writer's magazine. Like when I was freelancing, I used to, you know, find any place that was looking for people to pitch stories. And there was a writer's magazine that the online they had a thing where they every day they had a different like kind of ad for somebody who was looking for something. And there was somebody who was looking for a literary agent in Toronto who wanted the writers of serious nonfiction, it said. And I just sat down and I whipped out a pitch for a book about Doug Kenny. And the woman emailed me and she said, "You know, this is really interesting. I think you have a serious misunderstanding of what serious nonfiction is." She's like, "But it's not a book about the guy who wrote Animal House and Caddyshack, but I have a name for you." And she put me in touch with a literary agent who had just moved from New York to Chicago. And that was kind of how it started. And I, you know, she was like, let's do it.
Right. Well, you know, Doug Kenny, as you said, he came from the Harvard Lampoon, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the Harvard Lampoon, was that based in Chicago?
No, that was the magazine, the National Lampoon, you mean?
Yeah.
Or yeah. No, Harvard Lampoon was in Boston.
Harvard?
Yeah, at Harvard.
And, yeah, it makes sense with the name. Cambridge.
Yes. And then he and his partner went to New York and pitched around the idea of, you know, a national humor magazine. And that was kind of how that started. And they went from, you know, nothing in 5 years to, you know, selling it where each of them, you know, made like $3 or $4 million at a time when $3 or $4 million was really $3 or $4 million.
Yeah, right. You could buy an awful lot with that. And then he, of course, had a sad ending, right? He went off the side of a cliff or something?
Yes, he fell off a cliff in Hawaii.
It was never quite confirmed whether that was an accident or he committed suicide, right?
Yeah, whenever I got asked about that, I always said it was an accidental suicide.
Right.
He was somebody who never would have made the decision to kill himself, but he put himself in a position to die. You know what I mean? If that makes sense.
Was he self-destructive?
Yeah. You know, he was like a wonderful guy. I mean, everybody absolutely loved the guy. He had a self-destructive streak. He had kind of a self-loathing streak. He was very charming, very smart, you know, obviously very funny.
Mm.
But, you know, he developed a serious cocaine problem.
Right.
And, you know, as people did in those days.
Sure.
And then he died very mysteriously. He'd been with Chevy Chase on vacation in Hawaii to get off of cocaine. And then Chevy went back to L.A. and Doug stayed a couple extra weeks and wound up vanishing.
Right. Wow. So where did the story, where did that idea come from then to do a book on? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, sure. I went to a boarding school in Boston for high school.
Oh.
And when I was serving Saturday morning detention in the library, I read an Esquire cover story from 1981 about the life and death of Doug Kenny. And then the next summer, I got a job in the mailroom at a law firm as a messenger. And they had the guys who ran the mailroom were like the most awesome degenerates who ever lived. And they had every National Lampoon like ever published.
Wow.
And so I spent the whole summer. All you did was sit around, drink coffee, and wait to deliver mail twice a day.
Right.
And so I read like every National Lampoon ever. And
How old were you?
I was 15.
15?
Yes, I was 15.
Oh my God. I don't know. You were corrupted.
Yes, I was completely corrupted. And I've seen Animal House and Caddyshack, you know, and all that stuff before. But like, so.
Didn't they have a cover with the I'll Shoot the Dog?
Yeah, if you don't buy this magazine.
You don't buy this magazine. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the classic. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I literally, when this woman had, you know, put up this ad for writers of nonfiction, I was like, it just clicked. I was like, you know, nobody's done a book about that guy. And, you know, and I kind of thought of the idea of paralleling his life and the rise and fall of the magazine, because the magazine really, you know, was huge and then kind of, you know, fell off a cliff, as it were, in terms of, you know, its content. So it was, you know, fairly meteoric rise and fall for both he and the magazine. So it just clicked in my head. I'm like, that's the story. And it wound up, you know, I was really fortunate to have, you know, to have gotten to the story before anybody else. And it was good timing and it was a great story. So,
yeah. And also National Lampoon produced Lemmings, right?
Yes, they did. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's where, so it was it was that and Second City that the two of them get together, had sex and created Saturday Night Live.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. It was Belushi, Gilda Radner, Chevy Chase, Christopher Guest, Harold.
Oh, Raymond. He came out of Toronto's scene, right? Bill Murray, his brother.
Yeah, Bill Murray's brother. And Bill Murray wound up replacing his brother in
Brian Doyle Murray.
Yeah. Bill Murray replaced Ryan in the National, I think just it was called the National Lampoon Show.
Right.
But at there, and at one point, somebody had suggested to the publisher of National Lampoon that they keep all those guys on some kind of small salary, even when they weren't working, so that they had their talent. And he was like, ah, guys like Belushi are a dime a dozen.
Yeah. Wow. What a great, great opportunity for you.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I kind of owe my career to that. That was, it just was one of those things that, for a medium-sized independent publisher, and it wound up really taking off and getting reviewed everywhere. And
what year did that book come out?
That was 2006.
Okay, 2006. Let's flash forward 18 years.
Yes, here I am.
Or just short of that. And here you are with me here on Film Waxman. We're going to talk about your latest article, or maybe it's not your latest article. It's your recent article, certainly, which is called A Man Out of Time.
Yes.
And you co-wrote it this time with Mark Freeman.
Mark and I worked on it together.
Is he going to Zoom bomb us? Is he going to jump? I should have invited him on.
I'll text him. He can join us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That just came out over the holidays.
Yeah.
And this is an article, oddly enough, of about another one of my favorite films ever. Like, I discovered this film a long time ago. I guess, been rewatching a number of my favorite Robert Altman films
mm-hmm.
over the years, and including, of course, Nashville.
Right.
MASH, McCabe and Mrs. Miller. There was like a handful of these films that I just, because they got the most attention for so many years, that I would, watch over and over. And there are a few others. And then I just started to spread out thinking, I got to see everything that he's done,
Yeah.
And one of the first ones I saw was The Long Goodbye. And I was, it changed me. It was one of those films that I didn't expect it to be better than almost, I think it became my favorite Robert Altman film.
Yeah, me too, and it's funny. My favorite Altman film probably before that was The Player.
Mm-hmm.
And I when I got this assignment, I was like, yeah, I loved it. I mean, it was funny. I wound up watching it a couple of times while working on the story, just because it's got such a great kind of like, for lack of a better word, vibe to it. You know, there's just this kind of like, you just are carried along on this kind of, weird Southern California early 70s journey. And I loved it. I would agree. I think it's one of his best films.
It's still, if anybody hasn't seen it, Elliot Gould plays Sam Spade and, in an updated version, and really kind of a really super brave thing, considering Bogart was the archetype for Sam Spade. To cast that against type was just a brilliant move. It was like, we got nothing to lose, let's just see how far we can take this idea. And I still use as a litmus, I will say to somebody, my cat, I'm going out getting cat food. I'll say, he only eats Curry Brand. And if they get the reference, they're a friend of mine.
What percentage of people get the reference?
Very few.
You're right. You're very selective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have very few close friends. But it's, yeah, and it just also has flashes of violence in it. And I'm not talking about necessarily big violence, although there's a little of that. But just even Henry Gibson and Sterling Hayden together. I mean, in those scenes, just, and then when he slaps Sterling Hayden.
Yeah.
It's a terrifying moment.
Absolutely. No, I mean, there's, and it's totally slipping my mind who plays like the big bad guy who they have the confrontation with, who hits the woman in front of him. But that scene is like just such, horrible, but stunning violence. And it really, it's got such great like performances. Sterling Hayden is just
heartbreaking,
amazing in that part.
What a brilliant actor. And do you ever read his autobiography? Ever read his memoir?
No, and you know what? I always have meant to read it because it's... I I've always thought it would be something that probably would be like,
yeah.
I've heard, first of all, just as he was a fascinating guy. I mean, I know, you know, all that stuff. He took his kids and sailed around the world.
Right.
And,
well, this is about, this book is about that.
Oh, really? Okay, cool.
Yeah. And it's written like a Faulkner would write, or how a Hemingway would write. The guy was a real writer. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, you know, I went down the rabbit hole with him because I have a whole also subject about the Hollywood blacklist and the witch hunt in general, the blacklist, you know, and he gave names, you know, and he really did him in.
Yeah.
What?
Under huge duress, right?
I don't think any of them didn't do it under great duress.
Right, right.
I shouldn't say that. You know, even Ilya Kazan, I'll say, gave names under great duress, but he dug his heels in so, and that I have no sympathy at all for him. But I actually, you know, it's like, I think the majority of people who, Hollywood industry people who gave names did so under tremendous duress.
Yes.
You know, whether you call them a victim or not of the Hollywood blacklist is, you know, it's a, I guess, the subject of conversation or debate. But with him, he, I think that plus the alcohol really did him in. I mean, by the time, I don't know if you ever saw that documentary that those European, I think they were Dutch or German filmmakers made, where he's on the boat, he's on the river.
No.
It was, I'll point you to all this stuff offline because it was on the Criterion Channel for a while because they had a whole Sterling Hayden theme for a while.
Huh?
You know, and, He was obviously mentally ill when they made this film, but I know I'm getting far afield from our subject.
I'll talk about Sterling Hayden.
But I just have a real deep love of him and his work that he's left, you know, like between that and Dr. Strangelove and what was it called?
The Killing.
Killing, all these incredible movies that he left behind, but maybe most of all, The Last Goodbye.
Yeah, no, you know, it's funny. My dad, who like, was a very quirky guy. I knew who Sterling Hayden was when I was 5 years old because my dad loved Dr. Strangelove so much. And you know, was like talking about Jack D. Ripper and, you know, and then Sterling Hayden. So I was aware of him from an oddly young age for somebody, you know,
right
in my time.
Yeah. You should write an article about Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah. No, I would love to.
I would love to write about that movie.
Yeah.
You know, that's just one of my all-time favorites as well. I know it's like, you know, supposed to be, but it really does live up to its name, you know, and
it's a
reputation. Dimitri, yes, of course I'm happy to talk to you, Dimitri, you know.
No, Dimitri, no.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Getting off topic here, but what was your experience? I described mine. My introduction to Long Goodbye, and then I've seen it probably half a dozen times. I just recently watched it again, introducing it to my girlfriend, but I'd never seen it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's funny. I had there were a handful of movies that were on when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that were like the late movie or like the after school movie. You know, it's so funny. I mean, I grew up, you know, in the 70s, and like, you know, obviously, like, it was very, you know, three networks and a couple UHF stations, and they were always showing Smile by Michael Ritchie, which was totally inappropriate for kids, but which I saw like 50 times. Taking of the Pelham 1-2-3,
right? Of course.
Yes. Yes. And the Long Goodbye was on.
Really?
Yeah,
I don't remember.
Just a little bit, you know, but like, I remember I had seen it. And then, you know, I've been like contributing to Airmail for a while and, you know, just kind of pitching stories. And I was like, you know, looking at films that had anniversaries coming up. And I was like, oh my God, The Long Goodbye. I haven't seen that since I was, you know, a kid. And then I rewatched it and I was just like, you know, this is such a cool movie. And, you know, Mark, who I worked on the piece with, had done an interview with Elliot Gould that he had actually sent me the video of. And, wow. And I was like, huh, I'm like, you know, let's pitch this. And so that was,
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, it was great. He was a wild ride.
Well, we'll get Mark on here eventually.
For sure. Absolutely. I'll put you guys in touch. But
Thanks.
yeah, it was you know, yeah, and so anyway, you know, he had interviewed Elliot, and so like I, you know, was like, hey, you know, let's do this piece to Airmail, and they bid on it, and it was
That's great.
yeah, and it was really a fun piece. I mean, you know, like getting to rewatch the film a couple of times was, you know, one of those, you know, like I can't believe I'm getting paid to do this kind of moment.
Moments, yeah. Well, did you discover, as we do, us types that, you know, are fans of this era of filmmaking and who watch, you know, every couple of years, maybe we'll catch up with some of the favorites. You know, we have a pool of maybe 20, 30, 40 films, and we rewatch them over the years,
Right.
and we discover new things about them. And so I'm just wondering if you had any kind of experience like that in these two watches. Like, was there something that came out of it? Sometimes it's even just a change of your perception of characters. It doesn't have to be a particular moment that you just noticed out of nowhere, because of course you do see more details the more times you see something,
Yeah.
but your perspective can shift on just the characters or the story or the, you know, the plot, whatever.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you know, when I grew up, you know, I think, and probably as I watched The Long Goodbye a couple times when I was a kid, you know, I was probably like, well, why isn't Elliot Gould just hilarious in this part, right? Because I always
Right.
thought of Elliot Gould as being, you know, as essentially a comic actor. And so his performance is so, I mean, he was, you know, I wound up, you know, going real deep on Elliot Gould in general when I was working on that. You know, and he was like, you know, he was like a stage kid. You know, he had grown up, you know, performing, and he went to, you know, one of the schools for, you know, for kids who had, you know, acting and artistic talent. So it was that was, you know, really it was really interesting to rewatch it, not with the idea of, oh, Elliot Gould's going to be hilarious, and just to really look at him as an actor, you know, purely as an actor, and then kind of reading about, you know, how Altman went about shooting the film. You know, I one of the nice things about getting to write about stuff like this is you get to learn a lot of stuff about filmmaking. And you know, one of and you know, I, and I don't know a lot about filmmaking, but I learn a lot of things about filmmaking. And the just reading about how they to kind of create the feel of the film, they had flashed the film, which was exposing it to more light for the first two acts of the film, and then kind of then did not flash the third, and flashing, you know, is the process of exposing it to light,
Yeah, right.
which, you know, I was wouldn't have known exactly what it was until I was working on this. So that was really cool. And then it's such great kind of, you know, that Altman storytelling, you know, that just kind of very natural way of telling a story that's not so, and then the hero does this, and then they, you know, wind up in the, you know, it's not formulaic in the way that so many films are today, you know,
Right.
where you,
American films.
yeah, American films, yes, where you tell the story and you know, where the hero has, you know, the problem, where the hero has to fail and then the hero succeeds and all that. And it's just it's like, you know, Altman films are so different from that, and it's just such a cool way of telling a story.
Yeah. Oh, did you ever see? I'm really good at just getting off topic. It's one of my areas of
We have that in
expertise.
common, so go ahead.
Did you have? This is only because I. This is maybe the last new Elliot Gould movie that I had never seen before, and I watched it probably since the pandemic, but I don't remember exactly when. The film he did with the late Christopher Plummer is a
No.
Canadian film.
What is it?
Really, did never knew about it. It's a caper, really offbeat film, really well made. I'll look it up for you. I'm going to
Yeah,
look up all these
I'll have to
things
check
for
it
you
out.
because I want to recommend it. But yeah, it's a very, like, you know, obscure Elliot Gould movie made in Canada. Pretty sure
Okay.
in the 70s.
Did you see him on Ray Donovan at all? Did you ever
Yes.
watch that show? He
Yeah.
was fantastic on
Yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's never bad. I
Yeah,
mean,
he's
maybe was he bad
always
on Friends? I don't know. He was just making money on Friends. He was
right.
not utilized, but you know,
Yeah.
like, but other than that, I'd say just about everything I've ever seen him in,
Yeah.
I
No,
have enjoyed on some.
he's great in those Ocean's 11 movies.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just he's and
Maybe
it's
the only
funny.
reason to watch them, really. I mean,
Yes, he's he yeah he's great. And you know what? One of the things that is so interesting about him too that I think kind of gets lost is like for a brief period of time, he was it.
Yes.
I mean, he was on the cover of Time magazine.
Married to the number one female star in the country.
Yeah. I mean, he was for about a 4-year period, you know, after Bob and Carol, Todd and Alice.
Yeah.
He was as big a movie star as you would find.
Right. I mean, him and Burt Reynolds, right? What are the odds of that?
Yeah. I was working on another project that was about why the 70s were better than other decades. And one of the things was we had far better Burts back in that decade. We had Burt Reynolds and Burt Convy. We had all the good Burts in the 70s.
Burt Convy. That's true. And Ernie and Burt, if you have to really go there.
And that was what the guy I was working at it with pointed
out.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, The Long Goodbye, again, in the cast, you've got Ellie Goulding. You've got Sterling Hayden, we mentioned. Henry Gibson, one of the Altman stable actors, yes. Right? Was, of course, very memorable in Nashville and plays a real unpleasant character once again in this film as well. Boy, he was good at that.
Oh, my. He was so great at being just weird.
Yeah. He got it. He understood.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know that many other movies he's made. He certainly was best. I mean, the best thing he did was those Altman movies, much better than Laughing.
Yes, absolutely. No, he was great and such a, I mean, he, like a presence that doesn't exist anymore, right? I mean, you couldn't think of who the modern equivalent of Henry Gibson, you know? I mean, he was just such an odd, you know, but kind of forceful presence. And he was like kind of so goofy, yet completely ominous in that film.
Very ominous. Who else is in that movie?
Jim Boughton, the baseball player.
Uh-huh. Did he play
he plays the
friend, Terry, what's his?
His friend is named Terry Lennox.
Terry, yeah.
He's a friend of Elliot Gould's character.
Right.
Who is accused of murdering his wife, and that's kind of where the mystery in the story starts. And that was Jim Boughton, who was, you know, pitched for the Yankees and the Seattle Pilots.
And
wrote the book Ball 4, which was really...
Is that right?
Yeah, Jim Boughton, who wrote Ball 4, played Terry Lennox in that movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and some executive said that was a perfect example of Altman's perverse casting.
Yes, right. I read that was in the article.
Yeah.
And the blonde is...
Nina Von Pelen. Which I'm trying to remember off the top of my head what else she ever was in.
I'm not sure, but she's a beauty.
She's terrific.
Very beautiful. Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah. It's really a great film. I mean,
it is. It is. It is funny and dark and just the right amounts. I don't know. I can see why maybe it didn't find its audience in the day. I don't know. Maybe it did. I just know that everybody should see it. If you're watching this and you haven't, or listening to this and you haven't seen The Long Goodbye, first watch it and then read the article, right?
Yeah, I for sure I would. If you're going to do one of the two, I would watch the movie.
Well, do both.
No, but
do them in the right order.
It's you know, it was the first of the neo-noirs, right? You know, and it was kind of a precursor to Chinatown and Night Moves and all those films. And it's just it's a terrific film, and it's a great portrait of kind of Southern California in the early 70s.
Sure is. And don't run out of that Curry brand cat food, because
no, absolutely don't.
Yeah. Or get a less picky cat, you know, like less intelligent cat. Well, Josh Karp writes for, among other periodicals, for Airmail. There's right there.
There's my name.
And absolutely. There it is. And I read all of his articles because I'm a fan of his writing. Yeah, of course. And I think we should just do this every time you have an article.
I'm in.
That's good. I love it.
I'm doing a Making of Big Lebowski right now, so I'll...
Come on. Is that true? Yeah. What do you mean, like an article?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, when I was standing on the stage with Steve a couple of months back doing a Q&A with Steve Buscemi, which I was, we've been orbiting each other this last bunch of months. We have a common friend, and our lives have finally become a mesh. We know each other now. We're becoming friendly. And, you know, I'm coming up to my 800th episode, so I'm trying to work on getting him on my eighth. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just working on it. But I think I'll get him eventually, but I'm hoping for the 800th. But when I'm standing on the stage at the Woodstock Film Festival and I'm doing a Q&A because he has a new film he directed, and it kind of had its New York premiere there. No, I'm sorry, it did not. It had its Hudson Valley premiere. I don't know what you call it, because it premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival. But so I'm standing there, and we do the Q&A with the audience. And at the end, I said, Steve, I've been debating whether to do this or not for the last few hours. I'm going to try. And he goes, okay. And I go, where's Pancake's house? You know. So and he cracks up. And he says to the audience, you know the reference? And, you know, some do, some don't.
Right.
And then after I walk off at the end, and he was quite, you know, did it. He thought it was, I guess, didn't offend him or anything. So we walk in, and this guy comes in. He goes, you know, you should have said, you're in over your head, Donnie. And I like, maybe that would have been better. But I've always loved Pancake's house.
Yeah. Well, and you know what's funny is I was doing some research, and apparently – that grew out of the fact that in Fargo, right, Peter Stormare's character,
yeah, of course,
wanted the pancakes, you know, and then they put it in, you know, Lebowski.
But to come up with just calling it Pancake's House was just, to me, you know, a touch of brilliance. It's just like, you know, I don't know. It's little details like that referencing going back to that you just, you know, Long Goodbye that you pick up and you just think are just what makes it all worthwhile, you know.
Yeah. No, I always my one of my favorite things in the movie is when he goes, when he's like, "Man, they're nihilists. They don't care about anything."
It's right. It's like when Steve Martin said, "Those French." It's like they have a different word for everything. I can remember that. Yeah. But this new season of Fargo, which, by the way, I don't know if you like the TV series, the Hulu show.
Yeah, it's fantastic. The new season is great.
It's amazing. And it directly references the film more than any other season. And it's right. Ending tonight as we speak, and or today. And we were traveling last week, as you know. So I've got a double shot for Fargo tonight I'm going to watch.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm caught up until the tonight's episode. So
yeah. And it ends tonight, right?
Yeah, it ends tonight. And boy, is John Hamm a great bad guy.
I was a little skeptical at first, but he's lived up to it.
Yes.
And I just, this season finally put it back on the map for me, that the series being really, really good. Well, I'm excited. So when do you have a deadline for the Lebowski article?
You know, as soon as possible. I'm working on interviews. I interviewed
you get Jeff paid Ridges. For these things. Yeah.
And I interviewed Tara Reid so far, and I'm working on the rest of the cast. So
I see.
But Jeff Bridges he and Tara Reid were both great interviews and very. You know,
but cool. Do you need Steve?
I do, actually.
You do. You need him?
Yeah.
Okay. Again, offline. My friend who I'm seeing Thursday. Let's end this right now. Sorry, folks. Josh and I get very excited when we talk.
We're going to make brunch plans later on this too.
What's that?
I said you and I are going to make brunch plans on air.
Yeah, right. Stay on, but we're going to say goodbye. Again, the name of the article is called
A Man Out of Time.
It's about the Long Goodbye. You can read it on Airmail. Subscribe to Airmail, and we'll look forward to Josh Karp's Substack eventually.
You got it.
All right. And you'll come back on soon.
Anytime. Thank you for having me.
Of course, all the time. Thanks for checking out the latest episode. I appreciate it. We've got a very special episode coming up. Oh my God. I think I've already announced it pretty much, but Wim Wenders is coming up. So you don't want to miss that on the next episode next week. Wim Wenders. Yep, that's right. Making his first appearance on Filmwax. It only took 13 years. Take care of yourself and the ones you love. Until next time, this is your host, Adam Shartoff, for Filmwax Radio.